And we're live. Hey, everybody, it's FL Teams Live. And we are coming to you with a Super Bowl 57 preview show today. Stay tuned. We got other stuff coming up before the Super Bowl. We'll talk about that in a bit. I'm Jeff Macalino. Joining me, as always on Wednesdays, or pretty much always, is Jeremiah Hensley. And we got Steve here from Married with Picks. Because he's going to provide some valuable insight into this game as well. Super Bowl 57. I will say, one team I think even Steve will agree had a little bit easier of a route to this game than the other one. the NFC turned out not to be weren't a lot of competitive teams, and the Eagles, let's face it, all year were the king of the NFC. The only little struggle I would say the Eagles had this year was when they didn't have their quarterback, Lane Johnson. Several of their players were out. They're healthy. Probably the healthier team, at least when you talk about major injury, because there's one that can swing the whole game. The AFC a little bit tougher, but the Chiefs, what is this, their third Super Bowl in four seasons? They're arguably, with a win here, kind of in that dynasty territory, making three in 4 years, winning a couple of them.
But with a loss, Jeff, Patrick Mahomes' Super Bowl record goes to 1-2. Not very impressive, especially when he's probably thinking he wants to catch Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, and boy, his Super Bowl against Tom Brady, one thing I'll say about that record, man, his receivers hung him out to dry in that game. And his offensive line, it was like 1 against 11. It was kind of like Patrick Mahomes played a game with my son's flag football team blocking NFL players and trying to catch passes from Mahomes. But yeah, he's coming into this one limping, literally limping into this one. So we'll see how that goes. Let's kick things off here by talking about our key to the game, and I'll kick things off first because I've kind of already teed it up there for myself. I think the key to the game to me is Patrick Mahomes' ankle. He gutted it out against the Bengals. He was severely limited with his mobility. He's a passing quarterback. He's not a running quarterback, but he is extremely mobile inside and outside the pocket in his passing game. If there is a team that you do not want to go up against as a quarterback, period, it's probably Philly in their pass rush. If there's a team when you're on a bum ankle you don't want to go up against, it's definitely Philly and their pass rush, which is only a few sacks. They played a couple more games, but only a few sacks away from setting an NFL record for sacks in a season, regular and postseason combined.
Six sacks again in the Super Bowl, they will overtake the 1984 Chicago Bears as the most sacks in an entire season, including the playoffs.
I think they'll get it. Again, they do have a few games over the 84 Bears, and then I think the 85 Bears were second. So those Bears. But this Eagles, I mean, they very well could get it. I mean, the Chiefs O-line is iffy. Mahomes' ankle is not, I mean, maybe it's healed up a lot in the 13 days between the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl, but I can't imagine he's going to be at peak mobility. And the Eagles, they might be feasting on sacks. So that's my personal key to the game. Steve, I mean, you've watched the pass rush all year for the Eagles. Well, you know, we're going to do a prop bet show on Saturday, but let's say over under 6 sacks for the Chiefs, or let's say 5.5, over under 5.5 sacks for the Eagles, I'm sorry, on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I think you probably would have to go over there. It'd be a little tentative because if Patrick Mahomes' ankle is 100% or close to it, which I think all reports are that he's definitely feeling a lot better than when he was playing against the Bengals. He's typically tough to bring down, but you really have a lot of dogs on that defensive line for the Philadelphia Eagles. And they were struggling against the run and had the corner blitz coming during the season. When you're struggling against the run, they brought in Dominic Sue, right? And drawing a blank. I think it was Linval Joseph in the middle of the season to kind of tighten up that middle. And what it's done is allowed the outside pass rushers to really kind of go at the quarterback in these games. And that's why you're seeing that high sack total. I think the key is Hassan Reddick. And it's probably one of the most underrated signings of Howie Roseman's tenure. But when he brought Hassan Reddick in, he was the first real move the Eagles made in the offseason before the draft. Hassan Reddick is a Philly native and played his college ball at Temple. So he even took a little bit of a discount signing a four-year deal. But Hassan Reddick, they're putting him in a position that he was successful in college, just rushing, putting his head down, rushing the quarterback. And it's really paid dividends as he's nearing 20 sacks. Is pretty strong. But you also have Josh Sweat from Florida State. I believe he was a second or he might have actually been a fourth-round draft pick for the Eagles about 3 years ago. And he's been under the radar. Not many people know about Josh Sweat until this year. He stayed healthy, and with the exception of one or two games that he missed, has really produced some good sack totals as well.
So I know you've watched a lot more Eagles football, right, this year, but I feel like when they made those moves midseason with Sue and Linval Joseph, that I feel like the defense turned it up just another notch, right? Like, I think it gets overlooked sometimes and you get overshadowed having those two big bodies in the middle of the defensive line that just require space. Right? The center's got to get off of them. You got to double down on them. The freedom that it starts giving those defensive ends to move around and get some space in what they're doing. Not only are they stopping the run, but you're right, man. That really turned that pass rush to a different level just by getting those pluggers right in the middle of that line.
Yeah, the Eagles had Hargrave and Fletcher Cox really tightening up the middle, but they started to wear down in the beginning of the season. They utilized their first-round draft pick for Davis out of Georgia, but he was very big. He got injured a little bit in the beginning of the season, and they were really only using him for less than 30% of the snaps out of the gate. So those other two that I aforementioned tackles really wore down because they didn't have a lot of backup. So when you bring Sue in, right, basically now you have three Fletcher Cox types, right, in Linval Joseph, and Dominic Asu, and Fletcher Cox, all guys at the twilight of their career, two of the three may be playing their last game in the Super Bowl. And Fletcher Cox very well might be playing his last game or at least his last game for the Philadelphia Eagles. But with using those three, the way the Eagles use their rotations on the defensive line, they're able to keep the tackles fresh and really clogging up that middle, which, again, allows the outside guys to kind of put their head down and go at the quarterback. So it's going to be very interesting that those big moves in the middle of the season are very underrated for the Eagles to continue. And let's not forget the Eagles here. If they win the Super Bowl, when was the last time that we've seen a team really lead from wire to wire, right? I mean, they started out 11-0. So they've been the best team in football. You can argue AFC, NFC, right? And the AFC is a little bit tighter, a little bit better competition. But the Eagles and the NFC have taken care of business. They started out 11-0, right? Jalen Hurts is 16-3 as the starter of this team, and they never have relinquished the lead. So if they win this, it's been a while. I can't really remember last time somebody's led from wire to wire. Usually teams kind of struggle in the beginning, not too worried about it, as long as you're playing strong football in November, especially in December.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking 09 when the Colts started 14-0 and the Saints started 13-0, and they met in the Super Bowl, which was – that's probably the closest, like, wire-to-wire that I can think of. Probably, yeah, I mean, going back a while. I'm sure there's been another one, but I wonder why that one popped in my head.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about Sean Payton going to Denver, because that might be the best move that you could have had as a Saints fan, because hopefully he goes and gets his boyfriend out of the Saints – gets that horrible contract they gave to Taysom Hill a couple years ago.
That was not a horrible contract. That was not a horrible contract. That is a great contract.
I'll tell you what, Jeff.
Not going into that.
Giving Taysom Hill a four-year, $140 million deal.
No. Let me cut you off. That is not real money. It is a $40 million deal for 4 years. If he starts every game at quarterback, it goes to 140. Completely BS headlines from ESPN.
So even $40 million, isn't that like it? The 98 Steelers giving Cordell Stewart a $60 million contract for three years.
Don't compare Taysom Hill and Cordell Stewart. You're embarrassing yourself. Taysom Hill is a stud on offense. He averages over 5 yards a carry every single season. He's a receiving threat. He's a special teams player. He does everything, and he throws a pretty nice pass, too. No, not even.
Taysom Hill in his prime or slash Cordell Stewart in his prime?
Taysom Hill all day. Are you crazy? I look at slash. I
might go heel too, dude. I was never a slash fan.
No, Taysom Hill is also 7-2 as a starting quarterback, by the way. I mean, it's not like he didn't, you know.
So
one of those losses against the
Eagles. I can't believe we're sitting here and you're defending Taysom Hill as a good signing and a good player.
Hey, you're the one who brought him up.
But wait a second. Like, it may be in a veer off moment here, but, you know, when you do look at the stats in a bubble, Taysom Hill puts up good numbers in what he is. So, what's like New Orleans needs a quarterback and everybody's already attaching them to everybody else. Like
Derek Carr,
could you ever see them taking a season and just rolling it and just putting Hill at quarterback and saying, this is what we're going to do one season and let it roll. I mean, is he Tim Tebow light? Like what could Taysom Hill do?
No, he's better than Tim Tebow. He can throw a spiral. Tim Tebow never could do that.
It'd be interesting to see him in a full season.
I would love to, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going pretty aggressively for Derek Carr, which is, you know, we'll talk about this stuff next week. Let's focus on the Super Bowl.
Just trying to throw you a bone.
I don't mind it. Hey, it's NFC South. It's a Florida team's division rival. Jeremiah, do you have a key to the game Sunday?
Jeremiah froze. I think he has no keys.
He has no keys. He's just trying to stay very still, so we hope he move on.
There he goes. All right, it came back. Now, look, if I say key to the game, it's going to be this. How does Kansas City stop the run game for Philadelphia? Philadelphia has so many tools to control the time of possession, so many different playmakers. They get so many guys involved, but that's something Philly has done better than anybody in the league all year is they don't abandon the ground game. I feel like an old man every time we talk football. I talk about run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. Philly does that very well. And how is Kansas City going to be able to commit to stopping that and then have to cover one-on-one on the outside with Devonta Smith and with A.J. Brown? So I think the key is, can that front seven for Kansas City contain the running game for Philly?
Yeah, 416 yards rushing in two playoff games so far for Philadelphia. Not too shabby. Now, only 275 yards passing in two games, but they haven't really needed to
throw the ball, though, in fairness. Like, this isn't like
69-7, Jeff. Do I have to remind you the combination of the scores?
Oh, yeah. No, they didn't need to pass the ball.
69-7.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not every year you get Josh Johnson to come in the NFC Championship game, but
it's not the Eagles' fault. You know, they knocked out Brock Purdy, and, you know, you're sounding a lot like, you're sounding a lot like Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, all these guys after they got their ass whipped in Philadelphia have been crying ever since they lost about the rules and it shouldn't have been that way. Let me tell you something. If we were in the 80s and the 90s watching football and these guys were in the media talking like this, they'd be laughed out of the building. You got to be kidding me. The Eagles knocked the quarterbacks that they had suited up out of the game and they have to apologize for it. Yeah. And now we're talking about how lack of passing yards they had in that game when they didn't have to throw the ball. It's crazy to me that these Niners, you know, the Giants took the same attitude as if the Eagles aren't as good as leading wire to wire. And that's really why I think they are going to be motivated. They don't have to motivate themselves. These teams that they have beaten are motivating the Eagles to go into the Super Bowl and really lay one on the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's really what I'm expecting. I mean, 69-7, that's the combined Giants and San Francisco score when the Eagles played them. So, you know, I know maybe they play in a worst conference, but this isn't, you know, this isn't your grandma's team coming into the Super Bowl to play against the Chiefs and Andy Reid. Let's not forget that Andy Reid, longtime 13-year coach of the Eagles, technically owes the fans and the city of Philadelphia a Super Bowl. So we'll see what happens.
69-14.
He could make good and give the Eagles a Super Bowl this Sunday, and that's probably what's going to happen.
I think the people being disrespected the most in this show so far is the Kansas City defense. I mean, they're not anything to sneeze at here. I mean, they held a pretty potent Bengals team down to 20 points. They made the stops when they needed to. And look, their offense was not really the Chiefs' offense hasn't really gotten a chance to get going all the way because Mahomes gets hurt in Jacksonville, or not in Jacksonville, against Jacksonville. He's playing very hurt against Cincinnati. So we haven't seen the Chiefs' offense really in the playoffs yet. And I don't know that we'll, to be fair, I think this is the best defense they're going against in the playoffs, to be fair. But the Chiefs' defense, you know, holding the Bengals to 20 points is not anything to sneeze at, especially when your offense really can't control the time of possession. And I mean, the Bengals were on the field a good amount of time in that game.
Hey, Jeff, let's just remember 9 out of the last 10 games the Bengals played, they failed to reach 30 points. So let's not crown them as the best offense of all time. I mean,
I'm not saying they're the best offense of all time.
Right. The Chiefs do have a good defense, but the Bengals, even though they have these big names, have not put a ton of points on the board. And I think really it's going to come down to the Chiefs are probably going to have to score in the 30s if they're going to win this game. It's going to be tough for the Chiefs to keep
the Eagles are getting in the 30s?
Oh, absolutely. I think this game's going way over. So I'll tell you, you want to talk about key of the game. I think Jay Frog was right there with the rushing game. My key of the game is the offensive line, right? So the offensive line has been gelling really well. Lane Johnson is playing with a hernia, a bad hernia in his abdomen. I mean, nobody plays through this. And just watch him, if you go back to the tape, and see how he handled the most explosive defensive lineman this year in Joey Bosa. I mean, it was pretty darn impressive. If you don't know what I'm talking about, and I know you guys do, but if you're listening to this, you should really go back and maybe YouTube Lane Johnson against the Niners, because it was very impressive when you look at the injury and you consider that he was playing through that injury. So we'll see how he holds up, if he has anything left in the tank against the Super Bowl, in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs. If he goes down, the Eagles, all bets are off, because the replacement there is not that good. Everybody shifts around, and the Chiefs will take advantage of it. Andy Reid's smart enough to send his blitzes that way. So really, Lane Johnson is really, I say the offensive line, Lane Johnson is the key to this whole thing. If you look back to the Bears game, around week maybe 16, maybe 14, the Eagles played the Bears, and they were up pretty handily, or at least they had control of the game. And Sirianni probably made the one of the only mistakes that he made during the year by rushing Jalen Hurts, and he really ran 10 yards and got squared up by the Bears linebacker. And that hurt that put Hurts out for the next two games was a serious lick. And it was in the frozen tundra of Chicago, where it was probably, I think, about 10 degrees. So my point in going back all the way to the Chicago game, Jeff, to address a point earlier, I think even though the Eagles, as I pointed out, won a combined 69-7, it is a valid concern about the passing game. Because the passing game against Green Bay in the middle of the season, they looked really good against Tennessee. Hurts was throwing the ball up. He had no problem completing passes. Smith, A.J. Brown, who has kind of fallen off the earth here in the last couple of games, he hasn't gotten the ball. So look out for him. If the trends are, you know, usually in the NFL, in a big game, the guy who got the ball last time, the next guy, the other guy will get the ball. So Smith's gotten the ball two straight times. They can take their choice usually. And they'll probably go to A.J. Brown. But he's delivering a ball to Goddard as well at tight end. Ever since he got that hurt, that injury against Chicago, that was his shoulder. So, again, it's a valid point that you make, Jeff. If they do get in a shootout and the Eagles' defense don't stop the Chiefs, the Eagles are going to be forced to pass the ball. So I still personally have a question because we haven't seen it. I think he's probably fine, but I still need to see it. In the Super Bowl, I need to see Jalen Hurts be able to deliver the ball deep on a consistent basis and really feed the ball into A.J. Brown. If they're going to win this game, A.J. Brown has to get involved.
I agree with everything you said. I mean, that's I do think, and it's fitting because the NFL season is such a grind that really, my key was a guy's injury and your key was a guy's injury. And seriously, I mean, look, if Mahomes goes out of the game or Lane Johnson goes out of the game, the other team's going to win. I think almost certainly.
I agree. Mean,
you know, and hopefully for just from a football perspective, hopefully they're both feeling as good as possible. I know Lane Johnson's going to go under the knife as soon as the season's over. So he's probably not feeling any better, but you know, hopefully he at least can, I'm sure he'll do anything he can to stay on the field on Sunday.
Well, the key thing, I mean, Lane Johnson is a big wild card. I mean, the guy is probably he's top three offensive linemen of our era. I'm telling you that right now. You might not watch him as much, but this guy is dominant. He doesn't allow – I don't think he's allowed a hurry this whole season. This guy is sickly good. He's going to go down as one of the best left tackles ever. But the truth about Lane Johnson is that he struggled last year. He still struggles with mental health. He left the team and drove all the way back to Oklahoma on a whim right before the game. So my point is that, listen – people struggle with these kinds of things, but we saw it before when the Raiders were in the Super Bowl and their center took off and went down to Tijuana and didn't come back. And by the time he came back Saturday night, he thought all would be forgiven and the Raiders didn't even suit him up. So you always have to be thinking like there might be an issue. This guy deserted once. It could happen on the biggest stage. If it ever happens again, it probably would happen on the biggest stage. So hopefully Lane's okay and he shows up, but if the Eagles win and Lane Johnson stays healthy and he plays very well, all these things I'm saying, you have to consider these things just to put it in the spotlight of how awesome of a job it would be if Lane Johnson does, in fact, play, stay healthy, win the Super Bowl. This guy's been through a lot, and he's probably, like I said, maybe the best offensive lineman of our era. And that, I know I don't say that lightly. That's saying a lot.
I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, of his time period, I don't know anyone who's done it. He's got to at least be top three, like you said, initially.
You know what's really interesting about Lane Johnson is that when he came out of the draft, right, the first three picks of the draft were tackles. They were all supposed to be all world, and he was the third one taken. And I'm pretty sure he's probably the only one still playing.
Probably. Wasn't Jake Long one of those?
Yeah. That was a Dolphin guy. Hey, but I'll tell you this. It's funny you mentioned that, Steve, because I think that's one of the things that's been on my radar about this Super Bowl, because I'm from watching the teams on the outside. How you build these perennial contenders, right? 10 of the 11 starters on offense for Philadelphia were drafted by Philadelphia. Almost half of those were drafted third round or later. That's unheard of. The only offensive starter who was not drafted by this organization is A.J. Brown. So when you talk about earlier, Howie Roseman and the deals that he made, like he's been doing an unbelievable job. And then you flip around and look at Brett Veach on the other side doing the same thing with Kansas City. Kansas City's defense is in that same boat. So, you know, all this free agency stuff, I'm going to get hyped up about it because I'm a Dolphins fan and it's all I got. It's my Super Bowl, right? But free agency, you get in this crazy frenzy, but if you're going to be a winner in the NFL, you do it in the draft, and you don't do it on day one. You don't.
Let's even look at A.J. Brown, the one guy you point out that's probably most important, that's one of the most important pieces that wasn't drafted. The Eagles obtained him by giving a first-round draft pick on draft night. So he's kind of like a draft pick, but even smarter, right? Because what did Howie do? Howie realized one of his weaknesses was identifying the wide receiver position in the draft. Yeah. He made many mistakes. He ended up getting Smith, but he missed out on Jefferson, right, when he drafted Rieger. So what did he do? He knew he needed another big guy. Well, you already got a guy that has proven that he can do it in the NFL, so why not use the draft capital on the wide receiver? And ironically, that first-round draft pick that went over to Tennessee was used by Tennessee to take a wide receiver. Yeah. Hey, just to circle back real quick, too, to answer the question of the Lane Johnson draft. Lane Johnson was actually drafted fourth, right? So first was the tackle Eric Fisher from Kansas City. I don't believe he still plays for the Chiefs. Second was Luke Jokel, your guys from Jacksonville down at FL Teams. Yeah. The third pick, like you said, Deion Jordan from Miami.
Oof. Boy, that was an embarrassing one, dude. We traded up for that, by the way. Traded up for Deion Jordan.
Listen, Chip Kelly had just come to the Eagles, and he was the Oregon coach. So there was all kinds of rumors swirling that he would have taken him if he was available at four.
Yeah, well, don't worry. We'll bail you out. That Miami, look, as I said, the way to be talking about your team in the Super Bowl is knowing what you're doing on draft day, not on day one, but two and three. And the way to be here looking forward to free agency is Deion Jordan at three.
Exactly.
So kind of on the same talk. I mean, it is important to hit those late round picks. So my next question, anybody under the radar that you think might end up being a big player? And I'm going to cheat. I'm going to cheat for two reasons. I'm going to name two guys because they're both Florida guys. I'm going to name two guys on the Chiefs who are going to need to step up because I'm fairly certain the Eagles will dedicate a lot of coverage to Travis Kelce on Sunday. That's the weapon. The Chiefs receivers, you know, I don't know about Juju Smith-Schuster, whether his health, I actually haven't followed up on that. I know he got injured. So my two guys, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, USF Bull, there we go, and Kadarius Toney from the University of Florida, they got from the Giants in a trade. He was a first-round pick. One or both of those guys are going to need to step up, win one-on-one matchups against a tough, I mean, it's not going to be easy, but even if Mahomes isn't healthy, he's going to need one of these receivers on the outside to take a big step forward. Valdez-Scantling, look, he did it in the AFC. He was the AFC championship MVP, I would say. He had over 100 yards. He caught the touchdown. He caught a touchdown in the first playoff game as well. You know, can he do it again? I don't know. I don't know how they're going to roll coverage around on. I imagine Steve could probably tell me. I imagine though they're not going to, you know, just shadow Marquez Valdez-Scantling or anything. I imagine they're going to keep their corners on their side of the field and whichever Chiefs receiver lines up. But somebody in that receiving room, if the Chiefs are going to produce and win this game and score points, one of those receivers is going to have to step up. So I'll toss my FL team's plugs out there to two guys who went to Florida schools as my potential under the radar for Sunday.
Jeff, if I could address your picks for a second. First of all,
of course.
The Eagles, I don't believe, will pay any attention or roll any coverage to a player who cannot put up any kind of tally any kind of stats while playing with Aaron Rodgers. So that's first of all. Nobody's worried about Valdez-Scantling. He couldn't do it with Rodgers. He can't do it with anybody. So
I don't like that take.
You sign him to a 40-year contract and bring him with Taysom Hill, and we'll see. We'll build a great little team there at the Saints for you. So I do like the Toney thought, though. Let's bring it all, circle it all back, that in the draft, the Eagles – had taken Devontae Smith right in front of the Giants. The Giants, they traded with the Cowboys to jump in front of the Giants, took Devontae Smith who the Giants wanted. The Giants then proceeded to trade back so that the Bears could trade up and get Justin Fields. But when they traded back, who did they get? Toney, who fell out of favor in New York and got traded to the Chiefs. So it'll be interesting to see if this great draft day move that Howie made, the GM of the Eagles, to get up and get Devontae Smith, which looks like a great move, could end up burning them because indirectly, Toney is now in the Chiefs and playing against them in the Super Bowl. So if you're right, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Just to put some respect on Mr. Valdez-Scantling, the fifth-round draft pick in 2018, he's had his low career total in a season is 430 yards. He was the number three receiver for 3 years and that was in 11 games last year, 430 yards. He was the number three receiver his first 2 years, 581, 452. His third year, he was their number two. Behind Davante Adams, he's not getting a large target share there. 690 and six touchdowns. Last year, 11 games. This year, 687, two touchdowns. He's got two TDs and two playoff games. Put some respect on Valdes-Scantling, a fifth-round pick. It's not like he was drafted to take targets away from Davante Adams.
His best stats aren't blowing me away, Jeff, I'll be honest with you. But the best point you make is that there's not a lot of ball left after Davante Adams.
Right? Yeah, yeah. His best season statistically, like outside of touchdowns, is this year. And I'd argue Mahomes is better than Rodgers. And there's not a – other than Kelce, who is the lion's share of the targets in Kansas City, they spread the ball around a lot. They don't really have a go-to receiver, which, by the way,
I disrespect the Eagles. From Valdes-Scantling. I mean, I'm more impressed that you rolled off his numbers and stats than I am with the stats themselves.
Well, but look, here's one thing. I disrespected the Eagles before the season, although I picked them to win their division.
Before the season or all year long? I watched some of the power rankings, Jeff. Remember?
I had them in the top five for most of the year. Except for
You had them. You were quick to move San Fran in front of them by week 14.
Yeah.
How'd that play out?
Well, calls it like, I don't know. They didn't play in week 14.
Hey, so I want to stay on this under the radar thing because it ties in too well, right? You stayed with your Florida boys. I'm going to stay with FL teams and give you a Florida guy, but we're going on the opposite side of the ball with the opposite team. Jeff, you opened my eyes last year to a little pain in the ass named Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right? Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and he's just a disruptor. And I think in a game against an offense like Kansas City, having a safety who can help out in multiple areas, be it on your Kadarius Toney, be it helping in the middle across Kelce, be it on Valdes-Scantling. And he just seems to find a way to be a pain in the ass. And in a Super Bowl, guys who can do that can create noise. It's way under the radar, but I can see Chauncey. I mean, he impressed me so much. I didn't watch a ton of him in the Eagles defense, Steve. So you got to correct me on that, on where that goes.
He apparently doesn't like the Chauncey Gardner comments.
I guess not. Like, what happened? We dropped out. But I haven't watched him a ton with the Eagles, right?
In the beginning of the year, I'm fairly certain they played him more in a deep safety role. And since he's come back, which I don't know if he even came back until the playoffs, I think they've had him more in that nickel spot. Steve, am I right about that?
Yeah, they moved him basically. And damn you, Frog, you took my guy. So I'm moving on to the next one. But, yeah. He basically was – listen, this is the key to the Eagles secondary, if you haven't noticed. He was out. They struggled a little bit. He wasn't there when they played the Saints right at the end of the season. He missed a couple of those games. What basically happens is they're able to move the guy who was playing slot – actually, he's playing safety. They were able to move him in and play safety for Scott. So if everybody's healthy, right, you have Bradbury – on the one side, and you have Slay on the other side at cornerback. They're playing Avante Maddox on the slot. They had been playing Gardner Johnson in the slot because Maddox was hurt. But now Maddox is coming back. He's the slot guy, and they're moving Gardner Johnson back to the only weakness on the defense, which was the safety. That's what was so key about picking him up from the Saints is his flexibility to be able to play safety and to be able to play cornerback. So the Eagles have basically been rolling with where do we need to plug him? But it's not like he's a guy that you're just plugging in the plug. He is an absolute steal and a kill. He's an absolute key to this game. If everybody's healthy and he's playing, you know, Jeff, you know better than anybody. And I just learned it this year. He talks with the best of them. He chirps all game long. And he's the guy, if everybody doesn't know, that when he played for the Saints, everybody, all the receivers kept coming up to him and just punching him after the play was over. He got punched like three or four times because he's running his mouth the whole time. He gets under the team's skin. But even more than his mouth is his leg. His legs are more important. He's covering everybody. He's got he had a bunch of turnovers before he got hurt at the end of the season. And literally, he was my key to the game. But I'll go back to you, Frog. You want to talk more about him?
No, sorry, dude. I just literally, I didn't really, he was way under the radar to me until I think we did a Behind Enemy Lines and Jeff talked to me about him with the Saints. And I watched him that game. Perfect. And he is, he's just in people's head, dude. And on a big stage like this, where, you know, we talk about people like Lane Johnson, hope everything's good together mentally, like CJ Gardner-Johnson's going to be ready and he's going to be chirping and he's going to be, he's just, he's got that Florida Gator swag and what it is. And I think that sort of stuff, big time players make big time plays. I think he's going to be, I mean, he's somebody to watch in this. It's a key.
Yeah. I could see him being a key to messing up my keys, my under the radar players, I should say, because I don't know, Tony and Valdez-Scantling, I would think could, you know, go into the Super Bowl for the first time. Because they haven't been with the Chiefs the last couple times they went. I could see Chauncey getting in their heads a little bit. That being said, Chauncey's also new to this stage.
So we'll see. Kadarius Toney showed in New York, he's not the most mentally strong guy. I mean, he's a hell of an athlete. He's got tools, unbelievable. But I
think MVS can make the same argument.
Yeah.
You know.
So I didn't mean to take that one from you, Steve. So give me another under the radar guy. You're the one with the deep bank of this. So give me somebody else we're looking at.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm clearly not going to go with a Chiefs guy as my backup guy.
I'm going to go with Boston Scott, another Saint pillage.
Listen, you're very close. I thought about, and I had to do this on the fly because I had CJ Gardner-Johnson all teed up. Well, you're very close, Boston Scott. Even more important than Boston Scott is a guy named Kenneth Gainwell. Not a lot of people know about Kenny Gainwell, but he was a fifth round draft pick in the 2021 draft, 150th overall. Yeah, he rushed for 48 yards against San Francisco, but 112 against the Giants. So they really love Gainwell. They kind of brought him in to be a third down back, but what they've done is, and he's fresh, is they're giving him as many or more carries than Miles Sanders. Let's not forget Miles Sanders is a free agent at the end of the year, and Howie is not going to back the truck up to pay any running back. So if he's looking for a big payday, you can wave goodbye to him. And what Howie will do in this situation is look for somebody else who is going to take the ball and give it to them instead of the free agent. So you've seen Miles Sanders, who has had a hell of a year and has gotten 20 carries a game in a lot of these games. But as the season has come towards the end, and as we've gotten into the playoffs, Kenny Gainwell is stealing valuable snaps from him. And if he can get moving against this Chiefs defense, I think he is probably the number one back for the Eagles heading into the Super Bowl, even though Miles Sanders will get the first snap. And Kenny Gainwell is my key to the game. If he can get over, you know, if he can get at least 60, 70 yards, maybe catch a couple passes and score a touchdown, then – that means the Eagles' offensive line is having their way with the Chiefs, and they're probably going to win this game.
Gainwell was on my radar a while back because, again, as a Dolphin fan, I want to draft a running back every year, and we never do. So I watch these guys. Coming out of college, I believe he was the leading rusher his senior year in college or the year before he entered the draft. Coming out of Memphis, like, Gainwell was a stud from the beginning of this, a dual-threat guy who could catch the ball, run the ball. And I was surprised that he hung around as long as he did, kind of like the Chuba Hubbard, you know, down in Carolina. Yeah. So, I mean, like, Gainwell is absolutely under the radar in what he brings. And that's what I was talking about earlier. I mean, you got to worry about not just different runners, but running styles. Sanders, Gainwell, Boston, Hurts. There's four guys back there that, you know, if they chalk up, 50 yards apiece, you've rushed for 200 yards. Ain't like you turn around and give it to Travis Henry 20 times. You got to adjust. And that's, I think that's what's made the Eagles just dangerous, dude.
I agree. And listen, I know we're talking a lot about these kind of obsolete guys, but I think if we're honest with ourselves, probably the key to the game, and this might be under the radar based off what we're talking about, is Jalen Hurts. Let's be honest. The guy looks like a world beater. He looks like everything you want in a quarterback. He definitely is in the leader. The questions about Jalen Hurts is on the field. We talked about his shoulder being injured. But for me, Jalen Hurts has something to prove here and has something to prove more than anybody on that football field. Jalen Hurts has not done – he has been the best regular season quarterback in college and has been the best regular season quarterback this year. And in my opinion, is the MVP of the league. But I digress on that one.
Opinion.
The key with Jalen Hurts is that he has not done it on the top stage. He was benched in Alabama for Tua, right? And then handled it with class, but had to move along to Oklahoma, who was not able to get to the national championship game when he was the leader, right? So he's played well to get his team to this position. But as Jeff alluded to earlier, nobody's taking these stats and putting them in the Hall of Fame. They haven't had to throw the ball. But the truth is he just hasn't done it, and he has to prove it. And the fans of Philadelphia are really waiting to fall completely in love with this guy if he can take him over the top and win on the top stage, which is the Super Bowl. He's come a long way, he's improved. But the one thing he has not proved to anyone is that he can win on the top stage. And that's really what being a winner is all about. So if he loses this game, do you write Jalen Hurts off? I know the Eagles won't. They're going to sign him, and he's going to be the quarterback for a long time. Maybe they'll get back and have an opportunity to prove himself again. But right now, in 2023, there's no bigger game for Jalen Hurts, who, again, is looking to get a new contract, than the Super Bowl. And if he can prove it, they're going to back the Brinks truck up for him. Not Miles Sanders, but they will for Jalen Hurts.
It's an interesting, and it actually relates to Isaac's comment where he brings up Isaiah Pacheco. I'm definitely more likely to get burnt on the show because I'm batting 1,000 there. I could see both, as odd as this sounds, defensively, I could see both teams loading up the box against the run and saying, prove you can pass. Mahomes with his ankle and a limited receiving core. I mean, look, even if they're all healthy, they're limited as a wide receiver. Hurts, you know, we haven't seen him really have to competitively throw the ball down the field since before he got hurt in that Chicago game. Exactly. I could see in the beginning of the game, obviously, prove you can do it, we'll back off. But I could see them saying, no, you're not going to run. Prove you can throw the ball down the field and beat us. Then we'll back off. But otherwise, I could see the strategy being, let's stack the box and make them show us that they can do it. I don't know that running the ball is going to work early in this game, but I'm not defensive coordinator for either team. So, you know, who the hell knows?
That's what I think, though, is if you look at these two offenses and say they employ those strategies, I'll take A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith as a game breaker over Tony, Juju, Marquez. Because, I mean, those guys are possession, and they do well underneath that. But you sneak up too much, and Smith gets a step on you. Hurts don't even have to be that accurate. He's just got to put some air under it, right?
Well, and you make the same statement with Tony and Valdez-Scantling. Those guys are burners. But
here's what you need to look for, right? I think that is a valid strategy. And if the Chiefs are smart, they will stack the line and try to stop the run first, right? But what you got to look at is what kind of shots are the Chiefs taking on Jalen Hurts? Because I think not only do you crowd the line, and let's be honest, I mean, this is the National Football League, right? This is the championship of the league for 2023, okay? If they get a shot, they're going to take it. But the reason why I would put everybody near the line is because you're that much closer to Hurts. Because if you can get a big hit on him early, you might knock him out and not be able to throw the ball. He'll stay in the game because he's a tough guy, depending on the injury. But you want to hit that shoulder so that you hurt him throwing the ball. Because even though he hasn't had to throw the ball long, when he has thrown the ball long, he's connected with his receivers. He's looked really good. And in the NFC Championship, in the beginning of the game when he was rolling out, you know, there was some fourth down calls they could have gone for, some barely misses on third down. I think they would have rolled similar to against the Giants early against the Niners, but their early drives got stalled by their defense. So credit to the Niners. But Jalen Hurts did show that he can throw long. I think the key is get the defensive players by the line. Naturally, you're going to stop the run, but you got to look to take a shot at that shoulder when you can.
Yeah, I would be very conservative with Philly with letting Hurts run the ball. Although, look, thing is, what's a Dan Fouts line from The Water Boy? It's the last game. You got to leave it all out on the field. So, yeah, I guess, if you lose him running the ball, he gets knocked out of the game. Oh, well. I mean, it sucks. It's the Super Bowl, but better than hamstring him and say, no, don't run. Stay healthy. Take your chances, I guess. So disregard that sentence.
But believe me, the Philadelphia DNA is pass the ball. So I would not be surprised if they go back to it. Listen, I once watched an NFC championship in 2023, I believe it was, against the Raiders. Or I'm sorry, it was, I think it was 1999 against the, in that area, against the Rams. And the Eagles had the lead at halftime, and they ran Corral Buckholder all over the Rams. But when Andy Reid got out, which is funny, we're playing against him, all they did in the second half was try to throw the ball, and they ended up coughing up the lead and losing and not going to the Super Bowl. But that, even though Andy Reid was the coach, that's the Philadelphia DNA. It's how Jeffrey Lurie wants to win. He wants to throw the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if they come out slinging.
You know, I didn't put this together until we were talking about it here, but you got Mahomes' bum ankle. You got Jalen Hurts' shoulder that could be a question. Like, wouldn't just all of the NFL and really the viewing public in America love to see the third quarter start with Gardner Minshew versus Chad Henne for the 2023 Super Bowl?
You almost made me vomit.
Yeah, that would be horrible. Let's agree that would be horrible. Nobody wants to see that.
That would be so – well, you enjoy a train wreck. And
the Niners will be laughing if that happens.
You know the thing I think I was most wrong about all season? We're going to jump into predictions, but before the season, I think I said Gardner Minshew might be the best backup quarterback in the league, and I wouldn't be surprised if Hurts struggles if they go to Minshew at some point this year. Hurts obviously didn't struggle. I didn't say he would, but I said that's how highly I thought of Gardner Minshew. And boy, it took two games to really one, of course, I watched very intently. I'm like, yep, nope, he's not an NFL starter.
Well, here's the problem, Jeff, when you look at that topic right there, when you look at the MVP race, I think a lot of people, even the voters, were thinking exactly the way you did, and that this team can just be run with any quarterback, and that they weren't that impressed with Jalen Hurts. Problem is, when Jalen Hurts went out, pretty much the MVP voting
was that wrong.
Yeah. So let's say week two, Minshew takes over and struggles. Jalen Hurts comes back by week four or five and then has this run. Hands down, he's the MVP. It's all about how you get there, right? It's all about the perception. So I'm just going back to the MVP conversation. I know you probably like Mahomes for that, and there's a lot of votes on him, and he'll most likely win.
I think they're one and two in my mind. And I'll actually say the biggest argument for Jalen Hurts is the two games he missed. I think that right there is like, yeah, I can't be upset if Hurts wins this award. I wouldn't be upset either way, but he as far as value, being valuable to your team, yeah, going without him a couple games sure showed me that he was valuable.
Well, listen, Jeff, don't feel bad about your prediction that was wrong. Mine was much worse. I had Matt Ryan and the Colts in the Super Bowl.
I think Jeremiah, Isaac, and I all had the Colts in our top 10, if not our top 5 preseason.
Oh, my God. It looks awesome.
Jonathan, I'm pretty sure I had them fifth in my preseason power rankings, the Colts.
Is Irsay, like, not the worst owner? I mean, you have Frank Reich and Nick Foles on the same team that won a Super Bowl 4 years ago. And you fire Reich before you even give Foles a chance to play? Like, that's the magic there. You don't even give it an opportunity to happen. Crazy.
Anyway. Hey, look. Hey, you're talking Pepsi Challenge for horrible owners, dude. Don't start talking about the king. Stephen Ross will just own you on that. From tampering to give away draft picks to putting an F1 track around the stadium to an orange carpet and selling a percentage of a team to Serena and Venus Williams, Stephen Ross will be your huckleberry.
Yeah, he's nuts.
Yeah, he's a few pill popping issues away from being the next Jim Irsay.
Who's going to win this game, Jeff? I'm curious to see who you think is actually going to win.
Oh, I made up my mind while you were talking. mainly I wanted to throw this out there just to get under Steve's skin. I'm picking the Chiefs, and I'm picking it 27-13.
Oh, Jesus. At the end of the first quarter.
Yeah. It's going to be 69-13.
Yeah. 69-7.
Yeah. Now, I gave Eagles 13 points.
For real, I'm a fan of trolling with the best of them, but do you honestly feel like this Kansas City team can hold Philadelphia to 13 points?
Yes, I do. I don't know what the over-under is. I should look that up. I was big. I think I said this in our NFC championship game preview. I can't say words anymore. I'm pretty sure I said it on air. I know I have text messages saying I would bet huge on the unders on both of these games.
Yeah.
I would argue I was maybe not right with the – I was right. It was the under, but the Eagles kind of defeated my purpose. But the under was right, and I guarantee you the over-under in this game is too high too. I think we're disrespecting both defenses in when we look at this, and not us, the three of us. I'm saying in general, I think everyone's eyes go to Mahomes, Hurts, AJ Brown, Travis Kelce, all of these, you know, big time offensive players. They forget there's a lot of studs on both of these defenses. Yeah, the over-under is, well, I'm seeing a few here. 47.5.
Oh, that's over.
That seems like an easy over to me, man. So maybe I'm drinking that Kool-Aid. I don't know.
Okay, this one says under of over under 51. That one I'm definitely taking the under. That one seems a little low. 47.5 seems a no. I think the team that wins with the 20s, and I would love it to be a close competitive game, but you know, I could see it being a 20-13 game where a team scores late to give themselves that cushion. And yeah, I think 27-13, I'm picking the Chiefs to win. I could see either team winning 27-13. I don't think there's going to be as much scoring as America thinks, but you know,
Jeff, I'm going to give you four reasons why the Eagles will score more than 13 points and win this game. Trent McDuffie, Justin Reed, Juan Thornhill, Legarius Sneed. The secondary to Chiefs is not very impressive. I don't know why you're trying to write these guys into the Hall of Fame. I don't think this defense is that good. Quite honestly, I think they're way overrated. I think they're in trouble, and they're about to have their lunch shoved back into their face when they play the Philadelphia Eagles.
What's your prediction? Give me the score.
My score is 38-24 Eagles. The Eagles are going to score 30 points, like I said. They've scored 30 points all throughout the playoffs. When they're going well, they can get in the 30s easily. They have probably approached 40 points in my mind. I don't see the Chiefs getting over 30 points. I think at the end of the day, you're probably going to see some major defensive breakdowns. But I believe the difference here is the Eagles' defensive line. They're going to get to Patrick Mahomes. And the key here to watch is when the Eagles will start probably in a four-man line. But when they break out to a five-man line, when they're feeling comfortable enough that the cornerbacks and the safeties have it pretty much locked down. I mean, let's be honest. In my mind, all you got to do is roll double-team to Travis Kelce, and then let's see what you can do, Chiefs, because that's the main guy that you got to stop. So if you bring in the – when they bring in the five-man line, that's when they've seen a lot of success. They ran a five-man line against San Francisco. They lined up Fletcher Cox all the way to the outside and then ran a stunt with Reddick. And that's when Reddick got all the way around and caused some damage to the quarterback. He was in the quarterback's face no matter who it was. He was in Garoppolo's face, and they were too stupid to suit him up. That's how good he was.
There's so many great stories in all of these things. You know, I talked about Brett Veach earlier. That's a University of Delaware alum, right? He was with the Eagles back in the day, right? Veach. Yeah, I'm bad with him. But University of Delaware alum with Philly, with Andy
Reid. By the way, I'm a University of Delaware alum, so that's why I know how to pronounce his name. He was the Philly Andy Reid's right-hand man.
Yep.
Quarterback at the University of Delaware.
It's been unusual for me because I'm in, you know, the area I'm in, Steve, right where you're at, not being an Eagles fan. I do think in a weird way, this Eagles team has been disrespected all year. They have. And the biggest knock has been the NFC's weak. Well, you can't really help if you're weak. But when push has come to shove, the Eagles weren't squeaking by Minnesota Viking style. They were rolling people. And it got to the playoffs, and they're doing the same thing. So this Eagles team seems to have that edge, right? I'm going to go a little closer than either one of you guys went. I think I'm looking closer. It's going to be Eagles 31-27. I think it's going to be a close game because unlike some of the teams in the NFC, the Eagles play with high energy. They're going to come at you hard, and they're going to swing big, okay? The Giants couldn't bounce back from that. Early in the game, the Eagles took control. Now, maybe it was a freak accident with what happened or the hit with Brock Purdy, but early in the game, the Eagles took control. And when that happened, the NFC team couldn't fight back. But this is like the grizzled old veterans. I'm envisioning this as an old school Rocky fight, dude. It's going to be that Rocky fight where you come out swinging. Can you keep taking the hits? And Mahomes and the Eagles have been in, or the Chiefs have been in this so long. They're veterans. They've got playmakers that they're going to stick around. And I think it's going to end up in a real struggle and hopefully a really tight, close game coming down near the last possession. I think the Eagles just have a little bit too much power on the offensive side of the ball, from offensive line to running the ball. But I think Kansas City answers the bell better than any team in the NFC had a chance to and sticks around.
Listen, I agree with the disrespect. And there's probably been no greater disrespect than from FL teams in their power rankings of the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, you got to understand, I think a lot of it, let's be honest, and it's this way in the corporate world and business, it's this way in the football field. Perception means everything. And the perception of the Philadelphia Eagles has not changed, even though they've won 16 games this season. The perception is that nobody believes in Jalen Hurts, even though he's demonstrated time and time again that he's a tough SOB and is in clear control of every player in that locker room. But even probably the biggest disrespect is not even Jalen Hurts. It's Nick Sirianni, let's be honest. The coach has no respect from anybody because the guy's a little loose. If you really take a step back from the situation, they talk about these new age coaches. You got one in Miami, right? And everybody's hot on their old new age coach, but every one of these coaches is just a little bit off. They're not your traditional, Buddy Ryan, Bill Parcells, I'm going to just act the way a football coach should act, right? He's playing paper, rock, scissors in draft interviews, right? He's literally stripping down to a tank top and shorts to play one-on-one basketball with every member of the team, anybody in the front office that wants to play. Like, these are unusual tactics. And when he talks in front of the media, he's a little loose, right? It's almost as if this guy grew up in South Philly, right? He talks the language so well. But it doesn't come off very professional. Right? It comes off different. And I think that's part of the perception of why some people don't believe in the Eagles. It's not only because of the quarterback, because they don't believe that the coach is good. I will tell you this right now as an Eagles fan and watching this season the whole time. The most important thing that a coach needs to do is, just like I said with the quarterback, the same thing, is command the locker room. And these players respect him. They listen to everything he says. They all buy into his program. And it's evident with how they've played throughout the year on both offense and defense.
My favorite part of media day was quite possibly the stupidest question in all of football being asked to Nick Sirianni. Is this a must-win game? But the greatest response ever. He's like, yeah. Like, yeah. You're in the Super Bowl. Yeah, it's must-win. Like, it was just that little glib, like, what is that? It was that Philly response that I was like, Sirianni,
he's one of us. I'm telling you. And if you don't mind, I could just take a minute really to talk about Andy Reid, because we really haven't talked too much about him. But Andy Reid, I mean, great coach, probably historically one of the best coaches. And who knows, he might coach for another 10 years where he's got Mahomes, right, in a great team. But Andy Reid, and I'm going to tell you this as an Eagles fan, diehard Eagles fan, and I talk nothing but good things about Andy Reid. But if you want to break it down, here's the problem with Andy Reid. And this is why there's not that much love lost in Philadelphia when he left, because he struggled to win the big game. Let's not forget, 1-4 in NFC championships, right? His philosophy was back then to not put any money into the wide receiver position. He has fallen back into that same trap by getting rid of Tyreek Hill, okay? That is the same trap that he had when he was in Philadelphia, But the biggest problem with Andy Reid and my biggest problem with him as a coach, if you ask me what coach you would want for this game, I would have two answers. I would take Andy Reid all the way up until the opening kickoff. But as soon as that ball's kicked off, get him the hell out of there. He is a horrible game day manager, right? I don't think he's that great of a play caller unless you're scripting out the first 15 plays. Those are usually pretty good, but then they fall off after that. But the key to, for me is that when you get down to crunch time, when you're the clock's inside 2 minutes in both the end of the second half and the end of the game, if there's a mistake to be made on the field, believe me, Andy Reid's going to make it. Whether it's taking 30 seconds to figure out the play he's going to call and get it late, and they're going to have to burn a timeout, or just something stupid where the play call allows the clock to continue to run and it's going to hurt the Chiefs. Be on the lookout for bad clock management. Because that is Andy Reid, my friends. When you peel away on the record and all the history, he sucks at managing a clock on game day, and you'll see it on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I always keep an eye on that, and you're not wrong with Andy Reid and his clock management skills or lack thereof,
right? I mean, he has not changed since he's been in Kansas City. If you remember real quick, there was a championship game against the Patriots where they screwed the clock up at the end of the game and should have won. There's a couple times they should have beaten the Patriots probably. That clock management became a big factor. And my man Dougie P was the offensive coordinator when this happened. He didn't help the situation either. But I think when he came to Philadelphia, he showed the clock management wasn't an issue with him too.
Yeah, a lot of former Eagles coaches in the playoffs. Doug Peterson made an appearance too. All right. Well,
next year
we are we're going late tonight. But Saturday I mentioned we will be doing a prop bet show. We're gonna have to come up with consequences for the winners and the losers here. I know that Isaac needs to clip this when the team, it's a low scoring Super Bowl, and you know, show how smart I am compared to these two guys. Or when it's a high scoring Super Bowl, you clip that and play the Curb Your Enthusiasm music to it. So it's a win-win for FL teams.
Listen, Jeff, we're looking on Married with Picks next year to bring in some guest speakers. So we might have to bring you on the, if you can show that you can pick some prop bets, then I know my wife is and I are looking to bring on some guests. If you do well, we'll see about getting you on the program next year.
All right. We didn't keep track last year of the results. Isaac had a sheet with all of our picks. All I know is he got some great clips of me making fun of Eli Apple to play when he gave up his touchdowns in the Super Bowl. So that's all we can hope for.
Our whole props thing really just went – it was just Eli Apple. It was just Apple me making fun of Eli. He just got hammered. And then, God love him, he went out on Sunday – right, he went out on Sunday and lived up to every bit of what we gave.
I looked like Nostradamus.
Is there a prop bet on who's going to drink the most alcoholic beverages on Sunday between the three of us?
That's going to be you.
I think you might be right.
Sorry, Steve.
I think
I'm unbeaten when it comes to alcohol consumption.
Yeah, you know, Steve, we have to have that conversation. See, here's the thing. I've never seen my team in a Super Bowl, so I don't know how that affects you as a fan. You know, like, do you want to stay sober and together, or are you so stressed that you drink more?
I made the choice to stay sober. I think I had a couple beers during the game when the Saints were in it. This is your second go-around, Steve, so maybe you have a different strategy than last time.
No, it's pretty much going to be the same strategy. Other than the fact that I was actually at the Super Bowl in 2018. So I'll tell you real quickly how that went down. I was in the Mall of America because it was 2 degrees out in Minnesota. I was in the Mall of America by 10 o'clock in the morning, finding an open bar in one of the restaurants. And we didn't stop till we got to till we had to take the train into the stadium. We got into the stadium. We're probably some of the first few hundred fans in there. I found someplace on the concourse at 1:30 in the afternoon that sold both Miller Lights and Captain and Cokes, and proceeded to alternate until kickoff at 6:30. So I was feeling pretty good, and I'm probably going to do the same thing. Luckily, I remember most of the Super Bowl, but I was tuned up really well.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Were you the one in Kevin Hart's ears telling him it was a good idea to try to jump down with the team? Were you the one encouraging Kevin Hart?
Not me, but I'll tell you that being on the concourse there, I had a perfect view of Nick Foles, and I saw it coming before the game started. Nick Foles was throwing 40, 50-yard dimes for the entire pregame warm-ups. And I looked at him, and I said, he's going to win the MVP, and we're going to win. And that's what happened. Unfortunately, I won't get that kind of read this year.
We could go all night with that, but look, man, for real, it is. That's one of the things I love about the Super Bowl. Somebody coming out of Sunday that we weren't talking about and we didn't really pay that much attention to is going to live their childhood dream and absolutely on the grandest stage of them all do, become either famous or infamous, one of the two, right? And it's going to be a household name come Monday morning. And stories.
There you go. It's in the name. All right. Check out Married with Picks. Steve, thank you for joining us. Good luck. This was Steve not wearing his Eagles fan hat, by the way, folks. So
this is the objective.
I wore my Arizona State shirt from here in October. Welcome.
There's your Foles boy.
There you go. I love the color. It matches Jeremiah's, you know. For Jeremiah, I'm Jeff. Steve, thank you again. Enjoy the Super Bowl, folks. Come back Saturday for the prop bets. And, you know, shoot us on the internets, the Twitters. Comment here any prop bets you want us to pick. And we'll throw those in the mix as well. Peace. Awesome. That was peace. That was two fingers.
Go Birds.
I know I was at an angle. Yeah. I'm not a Philly fan.
You look like one. I think you're turning.
We're bringing him home.